anti-teacher thing and start to talk about how we can create great public schools for every child.
The Doug Wright Show on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
So many things are unfolding today, and we're trying to keep a finger on the pulse of it all. And where many people have, well, every civilized person in the world has just been stunned and shocked at what we have seen from ISIS. And it was, for some reason, particularly chilling to see this, you know, person with the black face mask and standing there with a knife and this helpless individual kneeling before him. And then when he speaks, he has a British accent. And now it is believed, and again, we're not getting the ultimate confirmations here, but it is believed that this is a particular person. We know his name. We know where he came from. We know if, again, all of this pans out, some things about his background. Many people have stepped up and said, if this indeed pans out, those who were at his schools, those who were his friends, are saying, we're stunned. We cannot believe this. We put in a phone call to Professor Amos Giora. We often turn to Professor Giora on topics like this for some insight and expertise. And does it surprise you that we appear to be talking about an individual who is well-educated, seems to have been a very nice person? His friends are all stunned that if this pans out, this is the guy.
Hi, Doug, and thanks for having me. No, am I surprised? I think it's important to highlight that it's not the first time, and I don't know if it's the last time, but certainly not the first time that an individual who has been clearly educated, quote-unquote Jihad Johnny, has a bachelor's in computer engineering, not the first time a terrorist or terrorists have been highly educated. I remind all of us that those responsible for 9/11 were educated, were not in any way lower middle class. They were middle class plus. Those responsible for the terrible attacks in Glasgow a number of years ago were not only educated, one or two of them were physicians. You know, they are as susceptible to radicalization as anybody else. And, you know, this gives the lie to this argument, which is, I think, very much incorrect, that terrorists always are the disaffected, angry lower middle class or lower middle class. And this case highlights the absolute inaccuracy of that argument.
You know, I think sometimes there's comfort in that argument for some of us. Maybe that's why we're so willing to perpetuate it and even believe it, because to think, well, if somebody's really downtrodden and they really feel as if they have no hope, and if they are undereducated, and if their children are starving, then, you know, we can somehow get, even though it is still so abhorrent, we can at least get into the mindset where it isn't quite so nuts to us. But when you think of this individual, you know, from a well-to-do family, grew up in West London, graduated from college, as you've mentioned, the degree in computer programming, and so on, those are the ones that are particularly difficult. And are they the particularly lethal? Or do they tend to be the most dangerous individuals in these groups?
I don't know if they're more dangerous, but I like your word about the discomfort, because we would prefer that they be disaffected. A number of years ago, there was a very dramatic and powerful and tragic suicide bombing in Israel done by a woman who was a lawyer who came from a family of means. And that obviously caused discomfort on three different levels. A, she was a woman, and two, she was a lawyer, and three, she came from a family of means. You're right, we would prefer, it's easier for us that they are disaffected. It gives us, quote-unquote, comfort. And when somebody is educated and comes from a family of means, you're right about the discomfort. Are they more lethal, less lethal? You know, those who did 9/11 were obviously particularly lethal, but I don't think that they're more or less lethal. But I think the really important point here is that it absolutely highlights the ability of terrorist organizations like ICE to recruit, whether it's lower middle class or middle class plus, and to be effective with respect to this broad range of socioeconomic backgrounds.
It is particularly, it really is unnerving, isn't it, when they do look like us, when they do have similarities to us, when they have been our friends or could have been our friends in various scenarios. And as far as what what clicks here, because there is somewhat of a pattern. You look at Osama bin Laden from a very wealthy, very influential family. Everything I've ever read on Osama bin Laden indicates that he was fascinated even by his own family's business and major construction and even the construction tools, bulldozers, caterpillars, things of that nature. On one side, he came from a business background and seemed to have an appreciation for it while he's launching, you know, planes into the World Trade Center.
You know, and in fact, bin Laden is an excellent example because of his father's very significant means. It gave him, bin Laden the son, the ability to be independent of any governmental support because he just had such significant resources at his availability. And he also obviously was a person, I don't think there's any argument, a highly intelligent individual with the resources. Jihad Johnny, you know, he has a bachelor's in computer engineering, computer programming, comes from means. There's his lethalness is not only the awful beheadings, but you can see he's very minded to social media. That's another point with ISIS, is how effectively they're able to use social media. Is that because some of these people must evidently be educated and understand, you know, how to use social media to impact? That may well be the case. But what is so important here, from my perspective, with respect to quote-unquote Jihad Johnny, whose name we now know, is it shows the ability of ICE to not only recruit lower socioeconomic background, not only males. I remind all of us of the females who are so-called ISIS brides, and they're clearly having extraordinary success, not only in the Middle East, but Europe, Canada, and here in the United States.
We had the three that were arrested yesterday wanting to go over and basically join up with ISIS. And one of those individuals actually said that in the name of ISIS, he would be willing to, you know, even kill the president of the United States. And apparently they had plan B, that if they couldn't get over there and actually be in the bosom of ISIS, that they were willing to buy machine guns and commit crimes here, primarily targeted at law enforcement. You look at their background, and you look at where they came from, which, again, makes it just so particularly chilling.
And on that note, there's a phrase that I suggest that we think about, which is a phrase that will make us uncomfortable. That's what's called local global terrorism. So we view ISIS as global. But the truth of the matter is, if they're able to convince, for instance, the women from Denver or these other individuals to commit acts here, then there's a direct link between local global terrorism, which in the perspective of the intelligence community and law enforcement is a fundamental shift in the paradigm.
Yeah, and that brings us to the gazillion-dollar question. How in the world do you deal with this? How in the world do you fight it? You hear a lot of the more hawkish in our country say, well, just go over there and bomb them. Take these guys out. It seems that it's almost like whack-a-mole. They seem to be popping up all over the place.
First of all, there's a certain effectiveness, but limited effectiveness to military engagement, and we have a long discussion about whether or not there will be boots on the ground in Iraq, Syria, you know, Afghanistan, Yemen. I don't know. Limited effectiveness of air attacks, but if you think about attacks here in the United States, the question is who's inciting, how are they being incited, and are we willing to have this discussion, which I've called for in previous books, about are we going to begin the process of at least asking ourselves, do we limit the right of free speech to those who are inciting? Because that incitement clearly leads to acts of terrorism.
You really do ask where that line is crossed, where it does become shouting fire in a theater, where the speech is so dangerous, immediately dangerous, and really causing peril, immediate peril to others. Where is that line when it comes to free speech? Because fire in the theater is always the example. You shout fire in a theater and it's not really a fire. You cause stampeding. It's an immediate reaction that endangers everybody and can kill people. So where is that line? And boy, on some of these, we're pretty close to it.
I think, first of all, the fire is clearly in the theater. I think we need to be honest about this. And the question is, how do we at least have a discussion about imposing restrictions on free speech, whether it's social media, whether it's mainstream media, whether it's what is called cyber incitement. What worries me is we're very hesitant to have this discussion. It's a discomforting discussion, using your word about discomfort. It is a discomforting discussion. I personally see no choice but to at least have the discussion, because we need to recognize that a group like ICE is able to use social media, cyber incitement. And not only is it effective, It's sophisticated, and this is a long-term strategic plan that they clearly have. And our response to date has been, at best, fumbling, but no more than that.
Yeah, the social media, hasn't that just introduced such an interesting, wonderful, but yet dangerous dynamic into so many things in our life, whether it's exposure for our kids to pornography, to the ability to spout all kinds of things that appear to take root so randomly around the world. It's something that is almost beyond comprehension.
But we have no choice but to address it.
Yeah, absolutely. Professor, I always thoroughly enjoy our conversations. Thank you for your insights.
It's my pleasure. Have a great day.
Professor Amos Giora with us here at KSL News Radio, a professor of law up at the University of Utah, has some great expertise in this particular field. And I truly do enjoy my conversations with the good professor. Let's take a brief break, and we will come right back with more on the program today. We'll be talking with Congressman Chris Stewart about Iran nuclear talks with Secretary Kerry.
Navigate modern life with the browsers. Coming up from